over there, you see some of the videos in the 10 years how the children sort of have grown. So the children that you saw in the early parts of the video are now grown in the late parts of the video. And you are all a part of this family, a part of this community. And we're glad that you could be a part of it. But here's how I'd like to visit our story. And that is, I want to look at lessons, waypoints, and milestones. Really, it's going to be around the issues of lessons that we have learned. It's, you know, sort of anniversary, you'd like to talk about all the good things and everything that, you know, we did that was so great and toot our own horn. But that's not what we are interested in doing. What we want to know is, how has God led us? And how He has done great things in transforming the way that we see our world because of our life together in the church. So it's not about the greatness of our church. It is about the mercy and goodness of God all the time. And so I've sort of looked at some of the lessons that our church has learned in the past 10 years, and I'd like to share them with you. And in doing so, I'd like to begin with the foundational ideas of our church. What caused our church to be born? And there's two of them in particular. The first one is a legacy of mission. And what do I mean by legacy? We're going to be visiting the topic of missional church and missional living this coming whole year throughout our church calendar in terms of sermons and everything else. We're looking at missionality. But that the word missional is actually a new word that's been coined in the past 20 years or so, been kicked around. But there's nothing new about it at all. We may use the word missional, but God has always had a mission. I hope that makes sense. So a lot of people ask me, what do you mean by missional? What do you mean by missional? Well, we don't have a mission outside of God's mission. We don't have a vision outside of God's vision. We don't have a purpose outside of God's purpose. What God does and what He wants to accomplish in this world is what we do. This is why the church exists. Not for potlucks, not to play bingo, not even all the good things that we do. The express existence of the church is found in the Great Commission that we read in Matthew 28. To go and make disciples of all nations. And what do we mean by that? Baptizing them and teaching them everything that Jesus has taught them. This is Jesus' command. If the church does not do that, we do not actually exist as a church. We might as well be a country club. And so, one of the foundational ideas of our church community is this understanding of the legacy of mission, of God's mission. Now, there's a little bit of a uniqueness to our founding and beginnings. And that is, a lot of us came from mixed generation or English-speaking Chinese origins. And some of us will have experienced what it's like to be within a church, an ethnic church, that is primarily just one ethnicity, and in our case, in here at F3C, it was a Chinese ethnicity. And one of the things that we struggled with was ethnocentrism. Now, the churches that we come from are excellent and wonderful at reaching immigrants of a particular language group or culture. But as people who grew up in those churches and took on roles of leadership, the question we began to ask is this: who are we supposed to reach when we do not share the same language skills? When in fact, a lot of church communities are built indeed to evangelize and to share Christ with particular people groups. But what happens when you have a group of people within the church who use a language that is popular in the mainstream? And that means someone like myself, I can talk to a person who's a Sikh. I can talk to a person who's Japanese. I can talk to someone from Africa or African descent. I have the ability to cross those boundaries really easily because I've been educated in a Western way. And being Chinese is something I treasure and recognize that is a legacy that God has given to me in my genetics and in my life. But for me to actually follow what Jesus wants to do in His mission and the mission of God, we wanted to move beyond some of the ethnocentric boundaries. And this is why one of the primary reasons why our church was planted. So that we might create a place where we can reach beyond just our home ethnicities. So that we could reach the nations. This does not mean that we're multicultural, because the culture is still an English-based culture. But to evolve uniquely in that aspect, to reach more people from different ethnicities, that we can join together and reflect the people of God. So that's one of the foundations. The second foundation is the legacy of the church. Now, what do we mean by that? And this is why we read these two other passages. Acts chapter 2 actually tells you the first things the church did. I was at a Tuesday group, which is a core group, and I was asked a really great question. I won't say who it was that asked me. But they asked me a question: do we have to actually meet every week? Or why do we meet just on Sundays? That's a great question. The reason why we did that, or meet on Sundays, is because the church at some point stopped meeting every day. Because in Acts, they met every single day in the temple courts. They shared everything together. They had meals together. They stayed together. It's like being on retreat the whole time. They would go there in the mornings, we're told. The slaves, for example, would belong to their masters as soon as the sun was up. So they would go to the temple in the dark and meet with other believers and worship God. And when the sun rose, they would return to their work. Return to their masters. This is what happened in the life of the church. Of course, then we developed a whole construct over 2,000 years of practice. And one of the questions we want to be able to ask is this, in the true legacy of the church, what does it mean to be the church? And what does it mean to do what the church is meant to do? And so while there's grace and variance in the ways we do it, we have to understand that meeting on Sundays is not all there is. There's a reason why we meet on Sundays. It is Resurrection Day, and we are not to give up meeting together. Instead of every day, we've made it one day of the week. It just makes it a little simpler. But all the other practices, the way that we sing our songs, the way we sit, all these forms don't really matter as much as the very heart of what it is that Christians have done for centuries. And that is to pray, to learn, to fellowship with each other, to reach out. The worship of God is central in the heart of the Christian, because we love Him. Because we actually love Him. Because He first loved us. And so the mark of the church should be what we read from John, first letter of John, and that is love itself. It's the characteristic that we should pursue. So one of the things that we did in planting the church was wanting to engage mission properly, or beyond what we had been able to within restrictions, and also to challenge the way that we are church in this day and age in North America and otherwise. So some of our forms are very familiar. If you go to a different church, you know, they're singing songs, they're, you know, doing things that we do. But there are things that we are hoping to continue to push differently and to build differently. This is a Semper Reformanda, is a Latin phrase that really means always semper reforming. Always transforming. Always examining the ways in which we do things. Why do we do the things that we do? Is there a good reason for them? And does it really reflect the very heart of God and the purpose of the church? These two foundational ideas is what our church is built on. The idea of mission in the idea of continuing to push the envelope, or not so much push the envelope, but to restore the original intent of Christ in regards to the church. So from there, we planted this church. You saw this picture. This is in Tony and Bonnie's house. I don't know where... Oh, there's Tony. Bonnie's not here, but you know, Jane and Janelle. This is their living room. So we met there for quite a long time. Well, 9 months we were there. And this is the group we planted. This is the first day of worship itself. It's right afterwards. And some of you are still here. By the grace of God. We then moved in July of 2008 to the community center, right here. And we were in the other room first. This is where the children are these days. But now we've chosen this room because it's a nicer room. But perhaps we are outgrowing this particular room. These are things that we continue to think about and are challenged by. But this is where we moved to. And one of the first lessons, and this is where we now get to some of the things we've learned, is the lesson of hospitality, or the lesson of mercy. And the story I'm going to tell you is this. It's about, when was this exactly? This is in, I've got the dates, in 2009, early 2009, Praise, I don't know if she's here, she's out there. Praise actually had a client, she's an audiologist, if you don't know, who suffered from a particular condition called, read this, osteogenesis imperfecta. I think there's any doctors in the house. Osteogenesis imperfecta is also known as brittle bones syndrome. That if you actually push this person, their bones will literally shatter. The life expectancy of these folks is very low. Because in the early days, people didn't... Well, they would get injured. And that would lead to a lot of real complications because their bones would just... were like glass. And so, Praise met a young woman who had this condition. And she was trying to fundraise because she did not have a wheelchair that she could use. And so she had written a letter to people like Praise, and Praise forwarded it to us in regards to trying to raise money for this chair. This is not the exact chair and the exact model, but it's something similar. These chairs are not cheap. They come in tune about $20,000. She was a student. She had actually lived quite a long time. And had actually studied at places like Emily Carr and SFU. But she had scoliosis. Her spine was twisted because of her condition. And she needed a wheelchair. And she was looking for funds. And she needed to raise... she was able to be supported by a foundation for half of that amount. But she needed to raise the $10,000 herself. And so a call came out. And that Praise contacted our leadership. And we had a little conversation, and this is a very significant conversation. Because we came from a particular understanding of how money is to be stewarded in the church. And we had a long conversation about it, and we arrived at this place. The understanding, even though this woman was not in our church, and even though she was not a churchgoer, or perhaps even a Christian, that when a need is presented to the people of God must act. Not for our own interests, but for the interests of others. Now that might not seem like a big deal, but when organizationally you're faced with something like this and you start making policies or making decisions, this affected all of us. And it affected the life of this young woman. It was about the missional drive that one person in our church had to meet the needs of others. And it was the ability of us to be able to do more together than we could by ourselves. And so we simply said, whatever she needs, we will provide. we had the joy of her sending us a handmade card. If you can imagine her doing that. And she came to visit us in her new wheelchair a few months afterwards. You see, this is not about our goodness. It's not about how great F3C is. The fact is that we had to learn. We had to learn what it is to be merciful. We had to learn what it meant to live for people outside ourselves. To give. To be hospitable. Sometimes I wish that we didn't have to learn those lessons if it was innate. But these things are not innate. These are learned behaviors. These are learned values. And this young woman gave us the opportunity. She served our church. To be completely honest, what she gave us in the opportunity to learn mercy was greater than any money we could ever give her. It was something you cannot pay for. Mercy in your own heart. One of the other lessons we learned is the lesson of the open door. And anyone who knows anything about church planting, and you might not know, is that you end up losing a lot of your people at the get-go after a while. Within the first year, there are certain numbers of ratios and stuff like this. And yes, we had our departures too. Because of our particular value system, the way that we operated, the way we had conversation and things like this, we had to learn to let go if people did not feel comfortable within our particular community, or if they simply had other sort of places to go. But mainly it is about values. Our church holds a particular set of values, and I've articulated what they are. We don't have a huge worship band. We don't have a massive youth group. We don't have a lot of resources, but what we do have is precious. The fact that we have one another. The fact that we are willing to listen and pray and be together. And so one of the lessons we had to learn, a hard lesson sometimes, is to how does conflict happen? And how do we say goodbye? And I wrote an article that you may be able to dig up called "Don't Leave the Church Through a Window or the Back Door." Always leave through the front door. And know that our church is willing to let people go on their journey. There were times when some people were very upset because others had left for whatever reason. And sometimes it's because there was maybe an issue of conflict or a difference of opinion. But in doing so, they're very brokenhearted. Do not be brokenhearted. God goes with everyone who comes or goes. And one of the prayers we learned to pray was this: God, bring to us those who need to be here. And God, take from us those that you need to send out somewhere else. And we do not attach ourselves in such a way that we hold people back. So understand that. This is a lesson to learn. Because there are hellos and goodbyes that we have to say out of just the natural flow of life, then hopefully if it's through conflict, that we still learn to handle conflict in an honorable, honest, and open manner. And that's what we want. Not everyone can be as honest as we endeavor to be, or hope to be. Because, as you'll see, we do talk about brokenness a fair bit, and that is sometimes very difficult for others, or some of us as well, to handle. So understand that, and be merciful. Be gracious. Be understanding. There is an open door in our community. This is one of the hard lessons. The lesson of sanctuary. To be okay not being okay. And this is one of the things that cause conflict and division. How does it happen when someone in our community is depressed? How does it happen when someone in our community has a particular set of needs? This is not the kind of church, and we've talked about this, where everyone's just going to wear their Sunday best and BS their way through smiles on Sunday. If you don't feel great, it's okay. I'm serious. Sometimes I don't feel okay. So it's okay not to be okay. And one of the stories I tell is that in 2004, in my history, there's a time when I felt very depressed because of what was happening in the church community I had been serving in before. And I really recognized that I was in depression. I didn't want to get up in the morning. And yet I had to go and preach every Sunday. You have to still perform your duties. And those were not good days. And they were very bad days. But one of the things that I learned was that, was from actually Eudora. She's not here, so I can talk about her. Was that she did not say a single thing. Because by 2004, all three kids had been born, right? And she had her hands full, and then she had a husband who wasn't really all there. I wasn't there emotionally. I just didn't have the capacity for a lot of these things. And I was depressed. And it wasn't, and being a pastor, I diagnosed other people in kind of a triage in regards to their, but it took me a while to realize that I was actually depressed myself. That I wasn't feeling great. And so I said, I think I'm actually depressed. And I did an online test and go, I'm pretty mildly depressed, if not moderate. And so with that, I began to be able to sort of think about what I needed to do. And frankly, I didn't have the energy to do anything. And it wasn't except by the grace of God and some very kind folks in our church that gave me the space. And by the grace of God and the Spirit of God, I was able to recover. And even though that's an experience I do not want to wish ever on any other human being, know that I understand. And I understand how hard it is to go to a church and put on your happy face when inside you feel kind of dead. And so in our church, not only from my experience, but also from the experience of people here in our community, it's okay to be not okay. This is a safe place for you to be a mess if you need to be that. But here's the thing. We want to be here present for one another even when we're hurting. And we want to be wise in the way in which we handle this. What Eudora did for me was that she just was there. She didn't tell me to get better. She didn't tell me to buck up. I think she just prayed for me. And there's a lot of burden on her. And I learned from her what it is. And in the end, she actually was the one who sort of helped suggest something that really helped me a lot. She said, and she had got this from somewhere else, maybe the internet. She said, find 10 things that you're thankful for. And frankly, I thought that was ridiculous. Because I wasn't thankful for almost anything at that point, right? My mind is in the wrong place. But then I said, okay, I'll just do it, right? Maybe it'll make her happy, or maybe it'll listen to some kind of... It's not like a magic bullet or anything. It's not like a magic pill. So I just started making a list. And lo and behold, I was able to find not 10 things, but more. And that thankfulness, at least in my situation, this doesn't work for everyone, but it worked for me, that in this very simple act of becoming grateful helped pull me out. And so understand that it is hard to walk with people in the church who are a mess. They're going to say things that don't make sense, maybe even hurtful. But it's our willingness to be with one another, to understand that the church is in itself the crucible in which we become refined and learn to love one another. It's the place in which we learn to be like Christ by loving those who are often, at times, difficult to love. And sometimes that may include ourselves. And that's totally okay. It's okay. And so we need a safe space where we can heal and be loved and accepted no matter what condition we're in. Another lesson we learned eventually was, and you'll know that these things all connect in some way eventually, but was that we learned to love those who don't love each other. People with broken relationships, could have been dating, or in some more painful experiences, people who are divorced or moving into divorce. A really bizarre happening in our church at that particular season was that people who were divorced both came to our church. And some of these situations involved children. One of the things that we taught was simply this: do not gossip. And do not, unless there is evidence of actual wrongdoing, do not take sides. This is what destroys people. Not just the church. When you gossip about people, that is a sin that is dark. That is a hatred. That is a way that you oppress others around you. And so in this conversation with these folks, our comment to them, our conversations with them went something like this, and that is, I know you don't love each other, but Jesus loves you both. And so do I. And so do we. How can we serve? And so that was an aspect and season of our time together. We understand that divorce is, in fact, a painful thing that God does not want anyone to go through. Now, though the church often has operated on the aspect of punishment, and that that's a no-go, we look at it and understand that in human relationships, it is a terrible, terrible experience. And this is why we do premarital counseling. This is why we continue to want to support couples and families in their situations, or even people who are single, because their decision making and their life in this aspect can carry a lot of consequence, both for good as well as for ill. Something different. Pastoral transitions. Pastor Ed was with us until about 2011. And Pastor Diane had joined us in 2009. Pastor Ed was my... this is Pastor Ed if you haven't met him. And he actually was my intern from the church before. And so when we church planted, he was our intern as well. He was going to school at Regent, finishing off and working at Starbucks, as well as being our church intern. And then he joined us full-time as my associate pastor. He has, of course, since left to go in 2011 to pursue his doctoral degree in psychology. He has actually returned to Vancouver. He is currently an elder at a church in Burnaby. So it's a wonderful thing to be able to track where our friends have gone. And Diana came and became our intern in 2009. And then in 2012, I believe... October 2011. That was the first full year, but it was in the end of 2011 when Pastor Ed had left that she became our associate pastor here as well. And, of course, she's still here. So these are some of the transitions that we went through. I'm the sort of leftover. And we had some other interns as well. This is Chris Chu. Some of you remember him. Or he was only here for about a year, from 2012 to 2013. And he was quite the character. He is now actually serving as the young adults pastor at ECBC, Evangelical Chinese Bible Church in Burnaby. When's everyone going to Burnaby? Anyways, he's there, and he's actually going to get married this year. So he's like, yay! You know, so, and then, of course, you know Ron. Ron is, and his family, Monica and Josiah, were a great blessing to us. It's just so wonderful for us as a church to continue to have interns or apprentice pastors. It's part of the commitment of myself and our community to create space in which they can practice shepherding, practice pastoring, and find mentoring for the sake, not just of our church, but of the church as a whole, and hopefully for themselves. And I hope you feel blessed, Ron and Monica, that we're not, like, you know, hard on you guys or anything. They seem to be having fun, so it's okay. And everyone seems to have fun. And this is something I want to share with you, is that when it comes to eldership and leadership in our church, if you're not friends and if you're not having fun, the church is doomed. It's as simple as that. If you're not friends, if you can't laugh together, if you can't cry together, if you can't share together, your community is doomed. Another lesson that we learned is the lesson of acceptance. And in regard to sexual identity, this is Becca. Some of you will recognize her. She had gender dysphoria. And she was actually slated to be one of our interns as well, after Chris Chu. But when she was presenting as a male at that point, she had a lot of anxiety. And I think it had to do with some of the aspects that, of our church, about being honest, about being vulnerable, and then being put into a place where integrity is required in that. And it wasn't that she did not have integrity. She did. But this is a very deep hurt in her life with gender dysphoria that she had to struggle with. And it was a very difficult season for our church community because we actually literally, well, it pulled us over. But the short story to it is that in the end, we actually, as a community, decided that we could welcome her and make her feel welcomed and safe, that this is a place where she could worship God because she wanted to. And so we accepted the aspects of transition and so on. If you want to talk more about that, I have entire papers written on this now that you can read in terms of theological, biblical perspectives, medical perspectives, psychological perspectives, to help us to comprehend. So the real work and her blessing to us was that we got to work through some very complex theological, biblical issues, as well as social issues, because of the way in which trans people are treated both within religious circles like the church, as well as society as a whole. And this is a massive education for us in that season, and I believe it's something we'll still continue to learn from. We are still in contact with Becca, and of course she's right here, and she comes in and just enjoys life with us as well. And she's currently back in the United States. We then also learned the lessons of justice. In 2014, this movie, We Were Children, came out. We brought the whole church there. We invited you there to watch a film that gave us a perspective on residential schools. And since then, we've done other things. In 2016, we began to recognize the lands that we meet on. And just yesterday, a number of us went to Regent College to a conference talking about the history and theology and understanding and future of First Nations people in Canada. And this is something that we want to be educated on, because I do believe that this is the justice issue that will define our nation in this generation. How we relate with First Nations people. I was raised in a conservative Chinese church, and what I learned was that my own thinking was colonized. In that I was taught a Eurocentric understanding of First Nations people as being the drunken Indian. And since then, understanding these things, I've had conversations to change the perspective of people within the Chinese community and beyond. When we think of First Nations people, we don't just think about stereotypes, but we can understand the systemic genocide that was executed on them for over 100 years. If you have your land taken from you, your home taken from you, and you have nowhere to go, because this is the place people go. Canada is the place people go. And you've got nowhere to go. What happens to you? And now you begin to understand why they may be in a situation that they're in. And our role is not, in terms of the desire of our church, is not to fix things. It is to be aware of them. It's to listen. To walk alongside. And not sling around stereotypes that do not fit, that are ungracious and unloving. So this is one of the aspects things that we've learned, and it is a continuing lesson for us. We have still much to learn in regard to this. Oh, and because of that, this is why we brought this up a little bit. Let's go back a little bit. Do read the UN declaration regarding indigenous people, and do understand the issues. Do take some of these cards or find the petitions online that urges our government to adopt the UN declaration. So understand with your mind and then act in a way that is just. Another lesson that we learned is a lesson in understanding, which sort of extends from where we just were. We had the opportunity to learn about autism, having an expert come and teach us, both in the congregation as well as the children's ministry, about the difference that a person may have in the special abilities. And in our particular situation, it is the way that we love someone in our community and actually love their family in Praise and Rob, and the beautiful son that they have and the wonderful addition he is to our community, because sometimes it is hard to understand his actions and what he does. And we understand it's a burden also to the parents in trying to explain. And so together as community, we want to understand and create space. And I think they have taught us, you guys have taught us, and Gabe has taught us, this way of understanding one another that we as a church need to continue to exercise and learn. Oh, the lesson of welcome. Yay! Well, we're very excited about this because we were able to welcome the Funjas. And actually, we had God really gave us a bonus in John and Azuzena as well through this process. How do we as a church open our hearts? And I want to say this very clearly. Even from the get-go, this is not about us helping them. This is about the heart of God and they giving us an opportunity for friendship. And what a wonderful friendship we're able to have with John and Azuzena and the Funjas because of what we have learned in the past and are able to sort of practice in the present. And so I'm really excited about celebrating the first year anniversary with you guys and just being part of our church community. And then there's one last lesson that we're going to be leaning into, and that's the lesson of power, or empowerment per se. And this involves Pastor Diana. I know she doesn't know I'm putting this stuff on, but because of her ordination, it is an aspect of power. It is our way of empowering someone, of our recognition of someone. And there are aspects and vestiges of issues of justice in regard to this. Because there is an issue in the church regarding women in ministry. And in this, we are willing to stand up and make a decision and see the giftings of a person as given by God and the Holy Spirit rather than to stand by old ideas. We're willing to test those things. Remember, semper reformanda. We do not change for the sake of change. We change in order to align ourselves better with the very heart of God. His heart of love, His heart of justice, His heart of mercy. And so, in brief, these are the lessons that we have learned and are continuing to learn, and the lessons we are yet to engage and embrace. So I promise that there will be a little bit of time left to us. We're kind of running about 10 minutes behind on all things. But I was wondering if anyone had anything that they wanted to share in regard to the life of the church. I know a few people have prepared a few things to say, so you know, just go ahead and jump in. I will just hand this.